Again, I would just stop the normal course of our programming to go live to Beirut. Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah, Secretary General of Hezbollah, is delivering his speech.
We must remember some important issues very briefly. First of all, ever since the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran has provided moral and political support. Of course, we'll speak about other types of support as well, but it has given moral and political support for Lebanon, Palestine, Syria, the Arab people, the Arab governments, the Arab rights, and Iran has taken a decisive, clear stance in support of the Arab governments and the Arab peoples in the Arab-Israeli conflict. It is enough to say that the Islamic Revolution, with the leadership of Imam Khomeini, the Islamic Revolution eradicated the strongest ally of Israel in the region, which was the regime of the Shah. The regime of the Shah was the strongest ally for Israel. The regime of the Shah threatened the Arab regimes and the Arab governments. It was a strong ally for Israel. And under the leadership of the Shah, Iran provided Israel with oil, with cheap prices. And so the Islamic Revolution, under the leadership of the Imam Khomeini, cancelled out this strong ally for Israel. This is enough. This is enough of an achievement to tell the Iranian people and the Islamic Revolution and Imam Khomeini, thank you, thank you, 1,000 thanks. But did the Arab governments say thank you to Iran? This is something else, which we'll discuss later. We must also point out to the former Syrian president, Hafez al-Assad. He also took a strategic stance. He also had a clear vision regarding the conflict. Throughout this period, the Islamic Revolution not only cancelled out or eradicated the strongest ally for Israel, Iran was transformed into a strong ally for the Arab governments and the Arab regimes and the resistance movements, and it provided whatever it could, any type of support it could, despite the fact that Iran was subject to a war, to isolation, to pressures, to accusations. But despite all this, Iran was never hesitant to stand in support of the resistance movements, especially the resistance in Lebanon and in Palestine. So, this was reflected by the leadership of Imam Khomeini in the first 10 years of the revolution, and after that, under leadership of Imam Khamenei for 20 years now. And the Iranian consecutive governments also walked on the same path, because even if there are different political governments or different politicians, and even if the power distribution is among different political parties, despite all this, all politicians in Iran agree when it comes to Palestine, Al-Quds, Lebanon, and the conflict with Israel, and how Israel is perceived and how the Palestinian cause is perceived. During the presidency of Dr. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, of course, many big events took place, many big events and dangerous events occurred, and I believe that his presence as a president of Iran helped a lot and contributed to providing a high level of support for the resistance in the region, especially during the July 2006 war in Lebanon and also the Gaza war. It is my duty to express the thanks, because expressing thanks to an individual means we express thanks to God. If we don't express thanks to individuals, it means we don't express thanks to God. I would like to, in brief, I would like to mention the following, because I know that our brothers in Iran won't mention this. And previously, not very long ago, I spoke with the Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad when he was preparing. Of course, you know that the issue of visiting Lebanon is an old idea which has been prepared for a long time. And I told the Iranian President that maybe some of the projects which Iran implemented in Lebanon, especially how it helped in reconstruct certain areas in southern Beirut, let's make a ceremony whereby the Iranian president will inaugurate certain projects which Iran has helped, which has contributed to. And the Iranian president answered me and said, any project, any inauguration, any ceremonies which could make the Lebanese people feel that they owe the Iranians, or that I want to show them that I have done something, that Iran has done something for Lebanon. I don't want to do this, meaning I don't want to make the Lebanese feel they are in debt to Iran. This is what the Iranian president told me. So for this reason, he refused to participate in the inauguration of any projects which Iran has financed. The Iranian president said, we are the ones who must thank the Lebanese for their perseverance and for the resistance and for the great victory which they gave to the Ummah. This was the stance the Iranian president gave me. And so, of course, if they don't want to speak, let us speak. The Lebanese who are waiting, all different Lebanese people who are waiting and who are awaiting this visit, of course, most of the people are viewing this visit in a positive manner. And anyway, what distinguishes Lebanon, what makes Lebanon Lebanon, is that sometimes or all the time we do have certain negative stances, whatever the event may be. But I must refer to certain points. I don't want to speak about what the Islamic Republic has given to Iran when it comes to institutions and support and its support for the resistance, especially in the south and in the western Beqa. Between 1982, especially in the 1980s and 1990s, you know that Israel during these years was destroying the homes and the shops, and the Southern Council was providing help to rebuild what was destroyed by Israel. Of course, this was not enough, as you do know. And Iran provided the assistance for what was destroyed, to rebuild what was destroyed. And especially after 1993 and 1996 and 2006, during these periods, after these three wars. Now, let me speak specifically about the July 2006 war. Let's put aside the moral support and the political support and all of the support which was given. Let's put this aside. Despite this, or regardless of this, in the middle of the war, and thanks to God, we were sure and certain that we would achieve victory in this war. And so for this reason, during the war, we were preparing for the day whereby we would reach a ceasefire. What would we do? How would we rebuild what was destroyed? The roads, the homes? How would we return the families to their homes? This was our priority after this ceasefire was reached. And I spoke with our brothers, our Iranian brothers, and we looked into the documents, and I told the Iranians, we hope that you could help us. We need money. This is very frank. I told our Iranian brothers, we need money right now, because when the war stops, we have a program which we must begin, a program of rebuilding far away from any bureaucracy. In between brackets, some might object and say that this money should have been given to the Lebanese state. But had this money been given to the Lebanese state, its destiny would be similar to the destiny of the money which was given from Saudi Arabia and Arab governments to the Lebanese state. We would have entered into a bureaucracy which was endless, regardless, of course, the political intentions. Regardless of the political intentions, if we say that there are good political intentions, even if there are good political intentions, the bureaucracy would have been endless. The real problem, as I said, was bureaucracy and the slow process. At the time where our people, we know that our people at the very end, the first day of the end of the war, would be waiting to go back to their homes and to their villages. And we were aware of the magnitude of the destruction because we were under the bombings. We were right in the middle of the bombings. And so the Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad quickly reacted and responded positively to our respect. I won't go into the numbers. Maybe at certain times I did mention numbers, the financial support. I will speak about specific or certain general numbers. At the very beginning, when the war stopped, we put together committees, working committees, and what was accomplished after the July 2006 war, allow me to say, I haven't highlighted this, but allow me to say what was accomplished is unprecedented in previous wars in the world. After a war, the accomplishments which were made in Lebanon are unprecedented, meaning when it comes to reconstructing what was destroyed. Usually, when a war occurs, when it ends, the destruction continues for 1, 2, 5 years, 10 years, and those who have lost their homes go and live in tents for 3 and 4 years. Until now, the Hurricane Katrina in Louisiana, until now, the inhabitants of Louisiana are still living outside their homes, and they protest against the American administration. Until now, they are affected. But here in Lebanon, ever since the first days of the ceasefire in August 2006, we began with a program to assist the people. We paid them money with very, very simple mechanisms. We told them, go and rent apartments. This is money to rent your apartments, and go ahead. And we pledge that in the first year and the second year and the third year, as long as your house has not been rebuilt, we pledge that we will provide you with the money to rent apartments. Until now, we are now in year number 4, and we are entering year number 5 after the July 2006 war. We are still paying to the families the rent, those families whose homes have still not been rebuilt. We are still paying their money for renting apartments. Where do we get this money from? We got this money from Iran. So we went ahead very quickly to begin reconstructing what was destroyed. Within weeks, thousands of houses which were partially destroyed were rebuilt, which were partially destroyed, as I said. Thousands of them were rebuilt and back new once again. Because if you want to wait for people to get the money from the state, and let me tell you, until now people still have not received money from the state to repair some of the damage to their houses. This is related to bureaucracy, to administration, etc., etc. But we helped the people, and we paid for repairing all of the partial damage to all the buildings and all the apartment complexes which were damaged. This would not have happened, of course. These are huge amounts of money, huge sums of money. This would not have happened were it not for the cash which was given to us from Iran and the mechanism, the quick Hezbollahi mechanism which was used, which we depended on to address this issue. And after that, we began with the Wa'ad project, meaning the promise project, in the south and in the Biqa'a, in Mount Lebanon, in other areas. It's not that complicated, because we have one or two apartment complexes, and so it was easy in this area. However, in southern Beirut, buildings themselves were destroyed. Complete buildings went or were transformed to rubble by the Israeli bombings. And so we began with Operation Promise, and the huge majority of the buildings were rebuilt and are still being rebuilt by this project Promise. And this project is continuing with Iranian money, Iranian sums of money, Iranian assistance. And this committee, Promise, is continuing with this project Promise, as all people know, to build the best possible apartment buildings they can. The, of course, Iranian committee came to Lebanon, and we said, leave the houses for us, because it's a social complicated issue. Why don't you take upon yourself the general projects, like the roads, the freeways, the schools, the hospitals? And the Iranians also make big achievements in that arena during the last 4 years. Let me read to you very quickly some numbers. When it comes to providing housing for the families, just for your information, in Lebanon, and these are very, very precise statistics, precise numbers, which we agreed to with the Lebanese state as well. The number of housing units which were destroyed in all of Lebanon are 19,918, nearly 20,000 housing units, and 121,300 houses which were damaged, housing units which were damaged, which needed half reconstruction or partial reconstruction. The number of families which benefited from the money which we gave them for renting apartments, 34,700 families. Of course, everyone can imagine the number as they can. When it comes to repairing the damage, 114,000 housing units. You know, when we repair damage, of course, all the building must be repaired, and the Jihad Bina company rebuilt about 1,200 common housings, and the state even announced a certain sum of money. In some houses, the sum of money was not enough, and so we pledged to add more money to these sums, and we, until now, we have paid 2,400. We have paid for 2,429 housing units. We have paid extra money, of course. When it comes to the economic losses, now there were huge losses, as we said, together with the Iranian Committee for Reconstruction. We gave compensation for some of the institutions. For example, the agricultural institutions, we have 9,900 institutions. For the farms, we have 3,300. The taxis, now we said if you want to speak about the personal cars, that is something which we should not intervene in. However, when it comes to taxis or tractors which are used in reconstruction, we gave compensation for 2,600 cases. Tourism sector, 11,900 institutions. The biggest burden was on the WAD, or the Promise Organization, to rebuild the buildings which were turned to rubble. Rebuilding, of course, the number of buildings which WAD, or the Promise Organization, rebuilt are 235 buildings, meaning 15 buildings still remain where people have taken it upon themselves to rebuild. And so this process is continuing. Until now, 80% of the project has been implemented. We have 135 buildings which have been given back to their people, which have gone back to new and which have been given back to the families. 100 buildings will be back new very soon. And so in general, 80% of a project has been implemented. Iran has provided 60% of a financial contribution for this project. 40%.
Okay, as you can see, that's Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah, Hezbollah Secretary General, delivering his speech in Lebanon. During the past 20 minutes, I can give you just what he said. He described Iran as the major supporter of Lebanon, and said Iran always provided Lebanon with moral and political support after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, whereas the case was not so before the Islamic Revolution. Iran has always supported resistance movements both in Lebanon and in Palestine, despite all the pressures and sanctions imposed on it. And Nasrallah praised also Syria during the time of the late President Hafez Assad, and also the current time, for adopting clear stances when it comes to the resistance in Lebanon. He thanked President Ahmadinejad for backing the resistance. He said Iran during the 90s helped Lebanon rebuild the areas destroyed by Israel. He's now giving certain figures of how many homes have been actually damaged, so destroyed housing units. The number stands at 20,000 families, for example, received money. There were 5,000 families, and he thanked Iran for helping Lebanon, actually Hezbollah, pay for the cost of rebuilding to those families. It said that 114,000 housing units are damaged, and 2,500 units have been paid for through the help of Iran. This is just what Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah has been saying in the past 20 or so minutes. Well, we should go back to the normal course of our programming here on Press TV. Stay with us. Well, we're going to go back to Beirut, where Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah, the Secretary General of Hezbollah, is continuing his speech.
this issue. And I'd like to say very clearly that we took preemptive steps so Lebanon would not be surprised, so that the Lebanese people would not be surprised by what was being prepared for Lebanon and by what the Americans and the Israelis were preparing for Lebanon, the conspiracies which were being prepared. So we opened this issue, we spoke about it, because it wasn't enough for us to only discuss it internally. We were in need of opening this issue to the public opinion. It was a public opinion confrontation, conflict. This was part of the aim of the indictment. This, I wanted to remind you of how the issue of the indictment began. So we entered and we discussed, we began with the argument and the debate. I want to reorganize this debate now, the debate regarding the indictment into the Special Tribunal for the Hariri assassination, because sometimes when we argue in this country, we forget the main story. We go to other areas and we forget the main story, the main point. Very calmly, we as Lebanese, what do we say? We all want to uncover the truth regarding the Hariri assassination. Nobody can accuse anyone of not wanting to uncover the truth. And we all want justice to be served. However, we want the truth. We want the real truth. We do not want what is fabricated. We do not want the fabricated truth. We want the real truth. We do not want oppression and injustice. We don't want oppression in the name of justice. Second of all, the way to serve justice is the truth. Without the truth, justice cannot be served. Without the truth, we see injustice. Similar to the injustice which targeted Syria, and similar to the injustice which targeted the four generals, similar to the injustice which targeted the Abd al-Al family and many of those who were arrested, and many of Syria's allies for 4 years. Why? Because they behaved not in accordance with the truth, but in accordance with the fabricated truth. The question here is, and I want to ask a very clear, calm question. Let's be calm here. And let's ask the following question. Without repeating slogans, I'd like to ask a question to the Lebanese, although this is not only concerns the Lebanese by themselves, because what is being prepared for those who are cooperating in this conspiracy, they are making preparations which not only target the Lebanese, but target the whole region. So here, the question to the Lebanese, and which concerns not only the Lebanese, but others, the question is, the international investigation in the Hariri assassination, does it really lead to uncovering the truth which serves justice? This is the question, very calmly, without any angry slogans. This is a humane question, regardless of Sunnis, Shia, Christians, Druze. Let's put this aside. You as Lebanese, who have witnessed the investigation into the Hariri assassination from the very beginning until now, under the prosecutor, the special prosecutor, Belmar, this international investigation, throughout all of its stages, after you witness the performance of this investigation, the behavior of this investigation, the details of this investigation, can we conclude that it leads to uncovering the truth? Let's begin from here. What leads us to uncovering the truth? We are not trying to say that we want the truth or you don't want it, or we don't want the truth and you don't want it. We don't want the truth and you want it. What I allege, what I say, is that Israel assassinated Rafiq Hariri. If this is uncovered, this will lead to a huge transformation and development in the region, which will serve the axis of resistance. And so for this reason, we have a big interest in uncovering the truth, because if the truth reveals Israel being behind the Hariri assassination, that would serve us a lot. So our question is, does this international investigation lead to uncovering the truth? Experience, what we saw until now, let me begin with the fabricated or the false witnesses. This is a very painful experience. Of course, we all suffered. At the end, Saad Hariri, and we thank the comments which Saad Hariri made. Of course, Saad Hariri made comments to the Ashraq al-Awsat newspaper and said that the false witnesses did a lot of harm and that there were false witnesses. And we thank Saad Hariri for this. But there are some in Lebanon who still deny the presence of false witnesses. the testimonies of the false witnesses were taken into account, and based upon these testimonies, if you want to expand the issue, expand it. There's no problem. Nobody must be afraid from opening the issue of the false witnesses. We can open it. We can open the issue of false witnesses. Certain false witnesses, the testimonies of certain false witnesses were taken into account, and because of these testimonies, there were attempts to stage a coup d'etat. Because of their false testimonies, they prepared for big projects in the region. Because of their testimonies, people were put in jail. And maybe some people gave information based upon analysis. And we can discuss all of this. However, certain false witnesses, their testimonies were taken into account, and their testimonies led to repercussions. And the international investigation, we knew what the international investigation would publish in its report before the report was actually issued. There were leaks made. All the Lebanese know this. Leaks were made before the reports of the international investigation were issued. And actually, I'll speak more about this in my press conference, which I'll hold soon. However, I wanted to focus and highlight this question. Does this international investigation lead to uncovering the truth, or does it lead to darkness, to ambiguity, to falsification, to fabrication, to framing certain sides who had nothing to do with the Hariri assassination, to making the guilty innocent and making the innocent guilty, making our friends guilty, with the support of some of you here in Lebanon, with the approval of some of you here in Lebanon? This is the question which I would like to ask the Lebanese. Now, regarding what happened in the last few weeks, actually, I have a very simple question. Why does Belmar insist on not giving any of the testimonies of the false witnesses, of not giving these testimonies to people who call for these testimonies? Why does United Nations, via the legal assistant of Ban Ki-moon, why does it have to go to extreme measures to prevent the false testimonies from being given to Jamil Sayed, one of the four generals who was imprisoned over the Hariri assassination for 4 years without trial? Some say this is a technical intervention, not a political intervention. Why do we have this insistence on protecting false witnesses? Why does the special prosecutor Belmar and the United Nations insist on protecting false witnesses? We call on him to hold these false witnesses accountable. When the International Tribunal called for certain Hezbollah members to question them, we made many requests. There is mistrust, but there are certain steps. If you take them, you will build the trust. First of all, if you hold the false witnesses accountable, this will build some trust. The International Committee or the International Investigation, the International Tribunal, has not held these false witnesses accountable. Not only that, it is even protecting these false witnesses. Today, we have a new issue. Special Prosecutor Belmar is protecting the false witnesses. The United Nations is protecting the false witnesses. This is in addition to the internal protection which they got. If you want to uncover the truth, okay, you don't want to hold them accountable, all right, but why do you protect them? We want to know. How were they fabricated? This is a big question which nobody has an answer to until now. We in Lebanon, we called on the Lebanese government. We told the Lebanese government that we want to open this issue, open this file of the false witnesses, and see who fabricated them, who's behind them, because this is a political issue. We don't want to take revenge, but we want to know what happened. Some said there were no false witnesses. Some said that there is no such file, and some recognized that there were false witnesses, and so the Lebanese justice minister was assigned the task of preparing a report for false witnesses, and for 1.5 months he's been preparing this report. I'd like to tell you, it's very clear that this process was slow. It was very clear that the preparation of this report was very slow. And we support the Lebanese Parliament Speaker Nabih Berri, who said that his ministers will not participate in any future parliamentary sessions unless false witnesses or the report on false witnesses is discussed. Next Tuesday, this report will be discussed. I don't believe until now that the Lebanese Minister of Justice has distributed his report as of yet. It is very clear that someone wants the process to go slowly. The next cabinet meeting must discuss the issue of false witnesses. It needs one cabinet meeting is enough, because it's only one question, and it's a very clear answer to this question: who fabricated these false witnesses? And this issue must be followed through without any hesitation. And the stance which was taken by the ministers of Parliament, Speaker Bitter, is the same stance as Hezbollah and Aoun and the rest of the opposition. We will not participate in any future cabinet sessions unless they tackle the issue of false witnesses. This is for the sake of our national interest. And I'd like to add to this: after transferring this file to the judiciary, we must also be sure that judiciary also quickly behaves in a quick manner, so that the process doesn't take 1, 2, or 10 years, because some say that we cannot hold the false witnesses accountable until the indictment is made. This is what was said before. I'd like to go back to the main question. We want the truth. Will the international investigation lead us to the truth, the UN investigation? Before the holy month of Ramadan, I gave my evidence regarding the possible Israeli involvement in the Hariri assassination. Mr. Belmar took this evidence from the Lebanese judiciary, and he requested more information, more evidence. Let's assume I don't want to present this evidence now. Let's assume I don't have any more evidence. Let's assume what I have is only what I showed in the media. What I showed in the media, isn't this enough? Isn't this enough for this international investigation? It's a clear question for those who want the truth. What I gave, the evidence I gave, isn't this enough for Belmar to look into the possibility of Israeli involvement in the Hariri assassination? But there was nothing. No steps were taken by the international investigation, by the international tribunal. They said that the indictment will be made in December. Any efforts looking into possible Israeli involvement in the Hariri assassination and the spies which we spoke about, the testimonies they made, no efforts have been made to look into this. Why? Because he wants more evidence. No investigation behaves in such a way. In any other investigation, in any investigation, one piece of evidence is enough to be looked into. In theory, people look into all different alternatives and investigate. One piece of evidence, two pieces of evidence. I gave you many pieces of evidence. The international investigation didn't look into it, neither did the Lebanese judiciary. And so I'd like to ask the question: did the Lebanese judiciary once again question the Israeli spies who are in Lebanese jails, who spoke about possible Israeli involvement in assassinations? Did the Lebanese judiciary ask the spies the question, when the Israeli commandos entered with your help, what day did this happen? Did it happen on the day of an assassination, for example? Did the Lebanese judiciary take such steps? To my information, no. And so, the behavior, the performance, nothing points out that the international investigation leads to the truth. Nothing gives us a sense that this international United Nations investigation will lead to uncovering the truth. Our experience tells us that the United Nations investigation is a political investigation, not politicized. It's political. It has been political from day one. It has a judiciary face, or it has been dressed in a judiciary clothing, but it is a political investigation which has been dressed a judicial dress. It's not politicized, it is political. Everything tells us this. You are the ones who must give us evidence that the investigation is professional and judicial and non-politicized. Not us. We have all the evidence. We have all evidence. We have all the information which the Lebanese witnessed. All the Lebanese were shown the information which shows that this investigation is for political reasons from day one. Now, you are the ones who must give us information that this investigation is a real serious investigation and not a political one. You must give us information which proves this. Now, regarding the indictment which the Israelis and the Americans and the British spoke about, many personnel, many Lebanese figures also spoke about it, many newspapers mentioned it, and they are even speaking about the evidence of the indictment. If we have witnesses. What guarantees us that these witnesses are not false witnesses? When the amendment was made to the investigation, it was made in a way which protects the false witnesses. It protects the false witnesses because of the previous experience. Who can say that the current indictment, or the indictment which will be issued, is not based upon the testimonies of false witnesses? Nobody can guarantee this. All of the media throughout the world says that Mr. Belmar, the special prosecutor, will base his information on the communications. He believes that the communications and monitoring the communications is enough for him to make his indictment. He said this is based upon the time. He said that certain phone calls took place at the same time where the assassination, or very near to the time where the assassination took place. This is what Mr. Belmar says his information is based on. The question here to be raised, is this evidence enough? Is it legitimate? Is this evidence which could be the basis for an accusation? And can we be sure that this is not a fabricated evidence? Did the Lebanese ask themselves the following question, when you come and give me your analysis of the phone numbers and the data, is it possible that Israel could have played around with this data? Is it possible that the telephone company could have played around with this data? Is it possible that the American or foreign intelligence could have played around with this data? Anyone can play around with this data. The, of course, telecommunications and the data, is this information which we could base such an accusation on in such a very, very important case, the Hariri assassination, one of the most dangerous cases in recent history? Of course, in a few weeks, press conference will be held, because we need to speak in detail about it. A press conference will be held about the issue of the telecommunications. It will be a press conference based upon technical telecommunications issues. This will concern the Lebanese, because the Lebanese must be cautious for their telephone lines. Amazing things have happened. We have witnessed amazing things over the past few months regarding telecommunications, and we know we are innocent from any accusations, but for us to confront these evidence with evidence of our own, we looked into the technical perspective, the technical aspect. We want to confront evidence with evidence. We want to say this is the technical evidence we have, this is the technical defense we have. We are not the ones who are politicizing. The last point which I'd like to make is, now they are speaking about telephone numbers, about solutions, about possible windows of opportunity to reach a solution. I do not want to speak pessimistically and bring about a negative atmosphere. I still say that we still depend on the SS equation, meaning the efforts between Saudi Arabia and Syria. Until now, nobody can say that these efforts have reached a dead end. There is a mistake which is being committed. What is this mistake? Let's come and see how can we address the repercussions of an indictment. This is wrong. We, the Arabs, we always commit this mistake. We go quickly to the results and we don't address the reasons. We always discuss how to react to the results. Ever since the occupation of Palestine until today, we always discuss the results. How should we react to the results? This is wrong. The correct way to behave is, how can we prevent this attack on the resistance in Lebanon and on Lebanon? How can we prevent the results from happening? How can we prevent America and Israel from using the international investigation, from issuing an indictment which accuses an honorable body in the Arab world, which is the resistance in Lebanon? Let's discuss this. How can we cooperate in the Arab and Islamic and the whole world in general? We cannot surrender to the international will which wants to issue an indictment, and then let's discuss how we react to this indictment. Let's prevent the indictment from being issued? Who says that the repercussions will be under my control or under your control? Who says this? Who says that you or me are capable of taking control of these repercussions? Who knows that those who insist on issuing this indictment, who knows that this is the first part of a plan which wants to drag Lebanon and the region into a phase which nobody can predict? So the correct way to behave is to discuss before the indictment is issued, not to say how the repercussions will occur, and not to say that Syria wants to make a coup d'etat, or Hezbollah wants to make a coup d'etat. These are empty accusations. This is not the way we think, nor do you want this. And let me be very clear.
Well, let's,
had we wanted to gain power in Lebanon, we could have done this in the year 2005, and we were able to do it in the year 2005, if this was really our interest, if we wanted to do it. And if we want to do this, we should have done this on the 15th of August 2006, right after the end of the July 2006 war. Why? Because we believe that what happened in 2006, we haven't spoken about it in detail. For the sake of the country, we haven't spoken about what happened in July 2006. And so if we really wanted to gain power and gain control of Lebanon, we could have done it and we should have done it in 2006, but we don't want to do this. So why do you speak about coup d'etats and gaining power, and Hezbollah at times wants to target Tripoli? Where is Hezbollah? Where is Tripoli? And at certain times you speak about sectarian incitement. Don't go and speak about these issues. Speak about the central issues, the central subjects. The most important issue, you Lebanese, is that there is an international will which is using this international tribunal to issue an indictment that accuses Hezbollah of performing X, Y, Z, and this is part of a plan. This is part of a plan which has other parts as well. So let's come together to prevent this plan from being implemented. This is the correct way to behave. But I'd like to tell you, yes, America, of course, does not want it. Israel does not want it, of course. Other countries, I don't want to speak about other countries. I don't want to open new issues. Unfortunately, I must say that there are certain people in Lebanon also who don't want this, who don't want to cooperate to prevent this. Some people are annoyed with the national unity government. Some people are annoyed with the possibility of an alliance between certain political factions. Some people are annoyed with this. Some people, even if there is a national understanding, they will take the appropriate, of course, they will be shown, they will be revealed that they have nothing to play in, they have no role to play in Lebanon, meaning there are certain people who will be sidelined if we reach a national understanding. So these people who I'm talking about, they want to prevent national understandings because national understandings will uncover their small size in Lebanon. So do we surrender to this international will, or do we stand up to it seriously and wisely, and do we cooperate, Lebanon, Syria and Saudi Arabia and the Arab world and any friends of us? How do we take this danger away from Lebanon and from the resistance in Lebanon and from Lebanon's future? And the primary and the only beneficiary from divisions in Lebanon is Israel. Some people make mistakes. Some people, of course, raise slogans and they are celebrating and waiting for the day of the indictment. They believe that the indictment against Hezbollah will make them victorious, but they are wrong. The indictment against Hezbollah will lead to one side being victorious, Israel and those who support Israel, and those who provide Israel with the most modern warplanes to change the situation in the region, and those who put pressure on the Palestinians to go back to direct negotiations in spite of a continued settlement activity, and those who put pressure on the Arabs and the Palestinians to put up with all of this humiliation which we witnessed in the last few days, whether they be the the Palestinian prisoner near the wall where the Israeli soldier is dancing, or yesterday when we witnessed the Palestinian boy who was hit by the car. Whoever has human feelings, anyone who with human feelings, can he put up with such a scene? Or the assaults on the houses in the West Bank where two people from the Azadin Qassam brigades were killed? Or what happens in Jerusalem al-Quds, the destruction of the houses? This is America, this is Israel, these are the Arabs, and here we are. Don't you find that what is going on now is happening at a time where nobody can do anything against this? Lebanon is preoccupied with the International Tribunal. Yemen is on fire. Sudan is also on the doorstep of furor. Iran has sanctions. Afghanistan, of course, is, you know, the situation in Afghanistan. Egypt, we don't know what the situation is in Egypt. It's not known where Egypt is headed and what other people have played a role regarding the internal situation in Egypt. So we are all preoccupied. Notice that we are all preoccupied at a time where this is going on with the Palestinians. Gaza, of course, is under a siege. So in the midst of all this, the Israelis want to impose their own conditions. So you must notice that all sides are preoccupied for the sake of giving Israel a chance to impose their own conditions on the Palestinians regarding these talks. So, as you know, I either take long to show myself or I take long to end my speeches. I call very frankly, very seriously, let's look at this situation from this angle. This is the best way to look at it. We can, of course, hold dialogue, and nobody is abandoning anyone. Nobody has taken the decision not to talk to anyone. This is our country, this is our territory, this is our dignity, and this is our blood. And our future is a common future, our destiny is our common destiny, and we must all take responsibility. This is our country, and we want this country to remain a country which is a country of dignity, a free, independent, green country, even if we gave this country our blood. Thank you very much, and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Well, that's just the end of the speech by Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah, the Secretary General of Hezbollah. It was a pretty long speech. The gist of the second part of what Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah said was, he regarded the indictment in the case of Hariri's assassination, he said that they want justice to be served in that case, that they don't want fabricated truth and justice, and injustice actually. He said lack of truth will bring injustice, and that Israel assassinated Hariri and wants this truth to be uncovered. But thanks to false witnesses and untrue testimonies, people have been put to jail. Leaks were made even before this investigation report by the international body was released. It was dubious if this international investigation would lead to uncovering the realities. And he said, why should Belmar, the special prosecutor, not accept to show us the false testimonies? Why should the prosecutor insist on protecting these false testimonies? And that's what the UN is also doing. He said, if you want the truth out, you should stop protecting those false witnesses. And that he said that the piece of evidence he himself, Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah, showed on the media, he was wondering if that is not sufficient for Belmar to kind of feel dubious and consider the possibility of Israel's involvement in the case. He said no such a thing has been considered, and he was asking if the judiciary actually questioned the jailed Israeli spies about the case. He said that hasn't happened either. So he concluded that nothing makes us feel that this international inquiry will lead to truth. It's been political since day one, he said, and said you must prove this investigation is not political to us. Regarding the indictment against Hezbollah, he asked how they make sure that the witnesses are not offering false testimonies. And the prosecutor bases everything on communications, he said, and he said this is not enough because they have seen numerous instances of spying and manipulation in the communication recently in Lebanon. He said maybe intelligence agencies or phone companies have manipulated the data. And he said, this will have repercussions, and accusing Syria of Hezbollah plan to a coup is meaningless, and that's not the right way to solve the problem. Hezbollah has had a chance to do this several times, but it has never wanted to. Well, that's just what Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah had to say. Let's go back to our normal programming.